able to keep the wages low is because they know very well that they have migrants who are ready, as I said, to work for $4 an hour. So if you eliminate that, you also improve your situation, you know, whether you have paper or no paper. So it's really an invitation for everybody to support them and to support themselves in doing so. And I want to mention one last thing.
Okay.
That movement is continuing. And I know in Canada there's been a lot of action taking place, will take place next week, about the same situation of the sans-papiers.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Benoit Martin. We are out of time. Could you just give us that website one more time, the Payday website?
Refusingtokill.net. Refusingtokill.net. And
all righty.
The information. Thank you, Margaret. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so very much. We are out of time. Today's show produced by Margaret Prescott. I'd like to thank, that's me, our audio engineer, Kiana Williams, our assistant producer, Romero Funes, and all of today's guests. If you'd like a copy of today's show, you can contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230. Go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. And thank you so very much for listening. And you all remember to please stay safe.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m. Next up is Fight the Empire.
Well, good morning. My name is Pierre Fogering, and the show is Fight the Empire. And today's Washington Post, an interesting story, that some of the former Colombian servicemen arrested in the assassination of Haiti's president had previously received U.S. military training. This is according to the Pentagon, raising fresh questions about the U.S. ties to Jovenel Moïse's death. A review of our training database indicates that a small number of the Colombian individuals detained as part of the investigation had participated in past U.S. military training and education programs while serving as active members of the Colombian military forces. That was a statement by Lieutenant Colonel Ken Hoffman, a Pentagon spokesman. So this is a very interesting development. Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont said the episode was a grim reminder that U.S. assistance to other countries can take unexpected turns. This is a quote, that while we want our training of foreign armies to build professionalism and respect for human rights, the training is only as good as the institution itself. The Colombian Army, which we have supported for 20 years, has a long history of targeting civilians, violating the laws of war, and not being accountable. There's been a cultural problem within that institution. So there we have it. I think this, we will see how far this story goes. Also in the news, this was the what I just read was the sort of a latest story in the paper today. Meanwhile, U.S. The original story I had in mind to start the show was it had to do with human civilization, which began about 6,000 years ago, and empires came and went, and ruling classes lived lives of luxury while most people struggled. But it wasn't until fairly recently, about 250 years ago, that human life ascended into high gear with the use of petroleum. This energy boost enabled our modern way of life, but oil and other mineral resources won't last forever, and so humanity looks to renewable resources to keep the good times going. Meanwhile, the planet has heated up and could become unlivable. Much of this was foreseen back in 1972 when a team of MIT scientists published a study called "And Limits to Growth." They created a system dynamics computer model of how the global economy works and how it might stop working. And this study got a lot of debate and was criticized by some as being unduly pessimistic. But now comes a new study that vindicates the original. this original story is if I could find the first page of the study, it'd be great, but let's see. This MIT study, this was published in Motherboard, which is an online news site, and it says a remarkable new study by a director of one of the largest accounting firms in the world has found that a famous decades-old warning from MIT about the risk of industrial civilization collapsing appears to be accurate based on new empirical data. As the world looks forward to a rebound in economic growth following the devastation wrought by the pandemic, the research raises urgent questions about the risks of attempting to simply return to pre-pandemic normal. And normal is in quotes. So this study if I can find the first page of the study, this does not mean that the it talks about two different scenarios. One is business as usual and comprehensive technology. Comprehensive technology is one that where methods are all sorts of methods are used to alleviate global warming. And so the study indicates that the original study by MIT back in 1972 was very accurate, and it predicted that that global warming could occur. And so the study got a lot of debate. I remember this Limits to Growth book. It came out what the MIT scientists did. They created a computer model of the global economy, and they used a whole lot of different variables, and they plugged in, they made changes in the variables to see what would to kind of outline what could happen. And so I guess it wasn't really meant to be predictive, but it sort of turned out that way. And so so it looks like the study is being being resurrected, as it were. They have but basically what the study indicates is that there are limits to growth, hence the title of the book, the title of the study. And and now it seems that these predictions, as it were, are actually coming true, where growth is slowing down, and we can see that the study was published by the Yale Journal of Industrial Ecology in November of 2020, and it's available on the website of a KPMG corporation. And it concludes that the current business-as-usual trajectory of global civilization is heading toward the terminal decline of economic growth within the coming decade, and at worst, could trigger societal collapse by around 2040. So that is less than 20 years from now. The study represents the first time a top analyst working with a mainstream global corporate entity has taken the limits to growth model seriously. Its author is a woman named Gaia Harrington, and she is the Sustainability and Dynamic Systems Analysis Lead at KPMG in the United States. However, she decided to undertake the research as a personal project to understand how well the MIT model stood the test of time. So titled Update to Limits to Growth, Comparing the World 3 Model with Empirical Data, the study attempts to assess how MIT's World 3 model stacks up against new empirical data. Previous studies that attempted to do this found that the model's worst-case scenarios accurately reflected real-world developments. But this last study was completed in 2014. Harrington's new analysis examines data across 10 key variables, and includes that the ecological footprints found at the latest data most closely aligns with two particular scenarios. In the original scenario, the one was the business as usual approach, and which really nothing was done to combat global warming and a halt in growth. And the other scenario was called CT, for comprehensive technology. And the study concludes both scenarios show a halt in growth within a decade or so from now. Both scenarios thus indicate that continuing business as usual, that is, pursuing continuous growth, is not possible, even when paired with the unprecedented technological development and adoption. Business as usual would inevitably lead to declines in industrial capital, agricultural output, and welfare levels within this century. The study author, Gaia Harrington, told Motherboard that an MIT World 3 model's collapse, quote, does not mean that humanity will cease to exist, but rather that economic and industrial growth will stop and then decline, which will hurt food production and standards of living. In terms of timing, the business-as-usual scenario shows a steep decline to set in around 2040. In the comprehensive technology scenario, economic decline still sets in around this date with a range of possible negative consequences, but this does not lead to societal collapse. So the business as usual leads to collapse. The comprehensive technology scenario kind of leads to a slowing down, a stop in growth that I suppose that people can actually learn to live with. If you want to ask questions or make a comment, you can give us a call. The number is 503-231-8187. Well, as we suffer through the latest heat wave, let's turn to an EPA report that lists the 10 causes of global warming. And they are, I have the study right here. The top 10 causes of global warming are power plants. 40% of U.S. carbon dioxide emissions stem from electricity production. So that is the first cause of global warming. The next is transportation. EPA reports state that 33% of U.S. emissions come from the transportation of people and goods. Also on the list is farming. Industrial farming and ranching releases huge levels of methane and carbon dioxide. This carbon farming contributes 40% of the methane and 20% of the carbon dioxide to worldwide emissions. Also on the list is deforestation. Then comes fertilizers. The use of nitrogen-rich fertilizers increases the amount of heat cropland can store. Also, next on the list is oil drilling. Burn-off occurs to oil drilling in industry. It releases carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. Also, natural gas drilling. Then permafrost. The melting of permafrost releases tons of trapped greenhouse gases, which further speeds up the melting of more permafrost. And scientists calculate that approximately 500 gigatons of carbon is trapped in the Siberian permafrost alone. And then also on the list is garbage. As trash breaks down in landfills, it releases methane and nitrous oxide gases. Finally, the last on the list is volcanic eruption. And it's interesting to note that of these 10 causes of global warming, the first nine can be kind of laid at the feet of our economic system, where the only one that is kind of outside the system comes from volcanic eruptions, which really can't be blamed on human activities. So if anybody has would like to call in or ask a question about this, give us a ring at 503-231-8187. Our nation, much of the world is moving towards a future of renewable energy, but the technology itself requires materials that are not renewable and are growing scarce. Solar power requires photovoltaic cells. Wind power uses giant turbines that require manganese, molybdenum, nickel, zinc, and rare earth metals. And renewable electricity is stored in batteries using copper. Electric vehicles require cobalt, graphite, lithium, manganese, and rare earths. Many of these materials come from a few countries. Most of our cobalt comes from the Democratic Republic of Congo. China supplies the rare earths. Argentina and Chile produce most of our lithium. An electric car, according to the International Energy Agency, uses 6 times the minerals of the old-fashioned gas guzzler. All of these minerals are growing scarce, with peaks coming sometime in this century. Oil, on which our economy rests, has enough for 46 years at current production. And natural gas, there is enough for 58 years. Phosphorus could run out in 50 to 100 years. Then there's aluminum. There's lots of bauxite in the ground, but the mining and smelting use lots of energy. Coal is the most abundant of these resources. That's enough for 188 years, but coal is one of the most polluting of all. And we are trying to get away from using coal. Then there are 17 rare earth elements. China supplies 97% of them and says that they could be gone in 20 years. From what I hear, there's even a shortage of sand, which, of course, is a major component of all our concrete structures. And all of this mining and processing uses huge amounts of water, which is left contaminated. So what this indicates is that our industrial economy is heading for some kind of if not outright collapse, at least some kind of a drastic slowdown, and that the growth that we are always being promised is probably not going to happen. And we might keep in mind that mining is an extractive technology. It takes from the earth and puts nothing back. And sooner or later, the one time a bounty runs out, and we might ask, what are we left with? And what we're left with is the only input that humanity has always had. And that's the energy of the sun. The energy of the sun is the energy that grows plants and trees and enriches the soil. But it's a bounty that's guaranteed to last only as long as we take care of it. And now much of the country is suffering through a drought, and it's possible that this drought is the end result of our industrial civilization. So this is Fight the Empire, and we are talking about the human civilization and what it is doing to the planet we live on. If you have a question or a comment, time is getting short if you want to say something. The number to call is 503-231-8187. It very often happens I get very good comments right near the end of the show, and there's really not enough time to explore them. And so I would really recommend that if people want to read some more on this, would be to get the book Limits to Growth. It was put out in 1972, and as this update indicates, its conclusions have been validated by all the latest data. And this was a study that was done by a team of scientists at MIT, and they created a kind of a model of the global economy. And then they put in these various inputs into it, and they changed them to see how they sort of changed the inputs, tried different approaches, and then they noted the results. Of course, this study, you might say, it's only as good as the original model, but the model has been tested, and it is available to anybody to examine. This is the nice thing about these computer models, that anybody can try it out. They can put in the data that they find, and they can kind of give it a test, see whether it pans out or whether it doesn't.
Dennis is on the line.
As far as I know, that the original model and the original conclusion have sort of stood the test of time. It's been almost 40 years since this study first came out back in 1972. And of the two approaches that the follow-up study examined most closely, one was the business as usual. And I wish I had, it's a good time to have a TV show, because here is a graph showing these sort of timelines of resources, population, industrial output, pollution, and food kind of going up and down. And according to the business as usual model, by the year 2100, all the resources, industrial output, and population have shrunk drastically. The only input that is that is expanding is that of pollution itself.
We have Dennis on the line.
Hello?
Dennis is on the line.
We have somebody on the line. Dennis, good morning, Dennis.
Yeah, thank you very much for this show. I want to know where you get this, where we get this report about the sources of the global warming and these things. I'm sorry, I didn't get the source. I guess I came in late. What is the source of these studies, MIT studies, that I can access after the show?
Okay, the original study was in a book called Limits to Growth, and it was published in 1972.
Lens of Growth?
Limits to Growth, L-I-M-I-T-S, Limits.
Sure, okay, thank you. And that was published in 1972.
Right, but the latest follow-up study is it's in a newsletter called Vice, V-I-C-E, and it's, that's where you find it, on this newsletter, and they have kind of studied it and put in the done the follow-ups on the original study. So that is where you can find the latest.
Okay, it's just called Vice. That's the name of the study, is Vice.
The name of the magazine, the internet journal, is Vice. V as in Victor. V I C E.
Yeah, I got it. Okay, so, and that's where I can find. Thank you so very much. I appreciate your program very much.
Well, I think it's something that people should look into, because we are being told that politicians and business leaders keep telling us about growing the economy as a way of avoiding the question of how the goods are divided, And but apparently, growth, endless growth, is not in the future. And there are very good reasons for believing that that growth is does have its limits. It will end at some point. And this is recognized back in 1972. And now the 1972 study has been validated. And so this, when that lesson sinks in, I think people realize that, you know, we've had poor people, we have insanely rich people, you know, trying to fly off into outer space. At the same time, we have people living on the sidewalk in tents and dying of one thing or another. And the standard response we get when people question this economy is that, well, you know, a bigger pie will include more people and help everybody. But apparently a bigger pie is not in the works. We're going to have to take this pie and we're going to have to divide it in some more equitable way, which we haven't been very good at in the past. But this is where, this is kind of where our future, where the future of humanity rests, in creating a system of production that recognizes the limits and divides the prizes and the goods in a fair and rational way. And so I hear our music playing. It's time to end this show. This is Fight the Empire, and my name is Pierre Fagrin. And